And our special guest, William Hallal, we're going to take calls with Bill this hour on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about his work Beyond Knowledge, how technology is driving an age of consciousness. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with William Hallal, his book Beyond Knowledge. William, you believe a younger generation needs to fuel this to make it happen. Tell me why.
Well, the younger generation is, they're the first global citizens. They intuitively understand the situation about the world. They don't see racial differences, gender differences, national differences. In fact, they celebrate differences. I see it in our students at the university. They intuitively understand that we have to change big time, and they understand global consciousness.
Hasn't the younger generation of every age bracket been the one to fuel change? Look what the young people did in Vietnam. They got us out of Vietnam.
Yeah, that's right.
So and then those young people are our age right now.
Yep, that's right.
Let's go to the phones.
By the way, George, I want to compliment you on something. I'm impressed by the way you accept this premise of global consciousness and the age of consciousness. A lot of people have trouble with that, but you seem to embrace it without any hesitation. That's admirable, and it makes our conversation a lot easier, I think.
Well, and it's so necessary, too. It's got to happen. If we're, as you have pointed out, if we're going to survive as a civilization, as a culture, we've got to evolve. We've got to keep it going.
That's exactly right. We've got to change.
Let's go to some of the phones. First-time caller Hank, truck driving in Kansas. Hey, Hank, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I have to disagree with the one aspect of global consciousness.
All right. What is that?
When it comes to the cell phone, for example, I refer to that as the global unconsciousness. People are unconscious when they're driving down the road, texting, talking on the phone. I'm the guy in the truck that has to avoid you when you're doing stupid stuff because you're not paying attention.
Well, now that is possible, but I see this, William, as the fact that technology can be useful or can be abused.
Yeah, I would agree with George. Every technology has its drawbacks. There are lots of drawbacks to the information technology revolution, but it's enormously powerful. It's changing the world. I mean, look at the drawbacks of nuclear power and everything. Any technology has drawbacks. We have to minimize those by being careful in our use of technology. And in fact, I think our relationship with our smartphones is going to change maybe in a few years where we don't really use them with our fingers. I think we'll just speak to a intelligent device that may be sitting in our pocket or it may be even implanted in our skin somewhere. And we'll just talk to it. And it'll do what we ask it to do. So I think it could get a lot more convenient. I hope that satisfies the reader, or the listener, rather.
I hope so, too. What would you love for people to grab when they read the book Beyond Knowledge?
Well, I think the main message is that this is not speculation. It's a science-based study of social evolution, and it clearly shows that where civilization is passing through a very well-defined life cycle, and now that cycle is reaching a culmination in this last phase of global consciousness an age of consciousness, and that we have to embrace this. We have to think differently. We have to think globally if we want to get through these terrible crises, climate, pandemics, inequality, financial instability, all that stuff, and have a mature civilization. We're heading towards, I think, a mature, unified globe. That would be something. That would be historic, and I think it's very likely. Our studies at TechCast estimate that a global consciousness will emerge, is likely to emerge about 2030, plus or minus 5 years. There's a lot of uncertainty, of course. And that, I think, would be the beginning of making the serious changes that are required. And we think a unified world is likely about 2050. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take 20 years, maybe more, to get this straightened out, to create a world that works, you know, a sustainable civilization. That's what we have to have, a civilization that is sustainable.
Can you imagine what the technology would be like?
That would really be something.
In 20 years, can you imagine what our technology will be like, Bill?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to be unrecognizable.
It would be wonderful, won't it?
Well, it's going to have demands, too. It's going to be more dangerous. I mean, technology is power, and that power can always be misused.
Absolutely.
So when we get more powerful technologies, we have to be very careful. Like AI. AI is a very powerful technology, but it can be badly misused, and we're going to have to work very carefully to keep AI under control.
I mean, look how the IRS is backed down on their facial recognition technology. Everybody complained about it. They backed off.
Well, I think facial recognition could be very useful. It can be misused, of course, like anything else. But England is almost completely covered with video cameras. They monitor everything. It's made the country much more safe, I think. And they have the potential to identify individuals that appear on those cameras. And that's a good thing. They can identify people that are doing nasty things, crime, whatever. So there are advantages to these technologies, but they can be misused. That's absolutely true.
Well, then you have the Chinese that are using the same kind of technology, but they misuse it.
You mean where they monitor
everything,
behavior of people, and give them social credits?
Yeah.
Well, you know, for the Chinese, it works though. I mean, they're setting up an incentive system that will force people to behave properly. So that's you know, it's well intended. It does have the police state quality to it, but it's well intended, and it may work for the Chinese. Who knows? We'll see.
Let's go to Cynthia in Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Hi, Cynthia. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
William, I was just wondering something. With the Internet, it seems to have a lot of things missing, like you go into a site and you're supposed to see more information available. I'm just wondering how social media can be, will stop, how we can stop it controlling us.
Oh, trolling. Oh, my God. Well, make some serious changes in the whole digital thing. I have a piece that just came out in CEO Magazine called How to Tame the Social Media Monster. It's a monster. It's out of control. It's spreading disinformation and conflict. It's caused political gridlock. We have to start monitoring disinformation on social media. We have to penalize it by imposing some kind of cost or fines or something. So we have a lot of work to do to get the social media and the digital revolution under control. It's going to take a lot of work.
And I got to say, William, too, that it is just an amazing time for people to really begin to understand and grasp this. I don't think there's been a better time for this to happen. What do you think?
Yeah. It's a big challenge. It's an enormous challenge. We have to learn a lot about all of these technologies, about the path that we're embarked on. And most people don't understand it. When I give talks, it surprises most people to realize that, gee, there's a logic to this. It has a direction. It's well-defined stages. We can anticipate what's likely to happen. That's a surprise to most people. They don't know that. It's not common knowledge. I'm trying to make it common knowledge. I'm starting workshops on global consciousness to educate people on what is needed and how we can develop this.
Next up, Brendan is in Austin, Texas. Brendan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much, guys, George, and all the Coast to Coast, and to the doctor here. I'm loving the conversation. So I'll be super quick here. With architecture, it kind of represents our minds and consciousness. So how do you think that architecture will be affected by the change in consciousness? And just one quick example, you guys were talking about roads and technology earlier. They're thinking about doing smart roads in Europe or solar roads that can have LEDs to warn of danger, like an accident or animals on the road. You know, you can have like lights that light up the road, and they get energy from the sun during the daytime. And even we could get it so efficient that maybe you could charge your car on the road. You never even have to stop ever.
That may happen. And explain what you meant by your architecture question. Brendan? Brendan, you with us? William, I'm losing you on the phone. You there? Nope, he is not there. Tom, call him back. Tom, call him back. Let's go to Brian in the state of Washington. Brian, you with us?
Yes, I am.
There you go.
Boy, he had a great question. Hopefully you do get him back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hi, George. Hello, Bill. I had a quick question. And global consciousness, 100%. It's amazing what the mind can do. And my question would be, we're all walking on Mother Earth on this ground. I mean, except for the aliens, of course. But what vibrations come from the Earth? Because I believe that with this consciousness that we all have, we can change the weather, we can change everything. And that will be my question, the vibrations of Earth. Thank you so much. Love you guys. Bye.
I think there's no question that we're going to be able to change a lot of things when this technology comes out. I mean, it's truly amazing. And I got to tell you what fascinates me. Where you can take a picture wherever you are. You're at a party of your little kids or something like that. And you can send it to my mother in Detroit. And within seconds, she gets it on her phone. I mean, technology is absolutely staggering. It's staggering. I mean, and it's only getting better and better and better. It really is. Let's go to Louise in Kentucky. Hello, Louise.
Thank you, George, for accepting my call.
Sure thing. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. I was very excited in listening to the guest. He's triggered a memory for me. During my 40 years of research on the continent today called Africa, I never used the internet. I was told to use hard facts, so I had to use old books, old maps, which is cartography, go to the continent and talk to the people. And then what sealed it for me was going to Egypt and reading the hieroglyphs on the walls of the Temple of Amun at Thebes. I saw the letters NGR, which stands for the continent Nigritia, which was the name of the people, which is what they were called until the Belgium Conference of 1884-85, when the name was changed. It's been less than 200 years that the name has been changed, and today the people do not know where they came from.
Now, tell me how you use all this technology in your life.
I don't use it.
At all?
No, but I was a computer technology teacher at Central High School.
Do you miss it?
No, George, because I know everything about it. I know how the information can be changed. One time I was at the library typing up information. When I typed it up and I went back and looked at it, it had been changed while I was sitting at the computer. This is what can be done to knowledge. You have to use hard facts in research.
Okay, very good. Let's go back. Bill, we got your back?
Yeah, I'm here.
And one of the callers previously wanted to know how all this will change the world that we live in, this technology. And I was using the example how you could take a picture, send it to somebody 1,000 miles away, and they get it within seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
It is. Well, I think we're going to see dramatic stuff in the next 10 or 20 years. For instance, we're enjoying Zoom calls now, but I think in 10 or 20 years we could do holographic conferences.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that would really be something.
And they won't look like little green things, but they'll actually look like people.
They'll look like your real people, that's right. It'll look like a representation of real people in the room with you, but they'll be all over the world, exactly.
Can you imagine? I do live stage shows, you know, and they're packed houses, they're sold out. Can you imagine if you put the holographic people in every seat? It'd be amazing. And baseball, because of COVID, they had these cutouts of people in the stands. When high technology gets to the point, you can put holographic people in there, like real people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, we're getting such power that really, really we can do almost anything. We can do almost anything in the physical world now. I mean, nuclear power, space flight, you know. And the same thing will happen in the information sphere and in the biological sphere as well. We're going to be able to control life forms, mastery over life. You know, if you want a 20-foot chicken, I could probably make you a 20-foot chicken. Almost anything, really. Synthetic biology is conferring the power to create almost any biological organism you want and to control the DNA structure of any organism. CRISPR, you probably heard of CRISPR.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they can edit the DNA code of an organism now. So you can do almost anything.
What is fueling the rise of technology? I mean, the brain, what is happening to the human brain to let it evolve to the point where it's coming up with all these incredible ideas and getting them done?
Well, you know, on the bigger scale, this is all beyond us. This is a far bigger phenomenon. It's evolution. Evolution has a life of its own. It doesn't care about us individuals. And it's just moving on. If you look at the course of evolution from agrarian societies to now, despite all of the wars and the rise and fall of civilizations, the collapse of the Roman Empire, the Dark Ages, the Renaissance, World Wars I and II, the Cold War, in spite of all of that, evolution is making a very precise path to higher consciousness. And so this is a lot bigger than any of us. It's almost spiritual, really. I'm a little reluctant to say that, but it's as almost as though life is drawn to this force that we don't understand that we call God.
Exactly. I want to talk with you about that when we come back in a moment, and we'll take final calls. William Hallall with us. His book is called Beyond Knowledge, How Technology is Driving an Age of Consciousness. Websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Those of you on hold, just hang there. We'll do our best to get to you when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Zen Cryer DeBrook joins us back after almost 6 years. Her latest work is called Your Inner GPS, Following Your Internal Guidance to Optimal Health, Happiness, and Satisfaction. Should be fascinating. We'll be back in a moment with our special guest, Bill Hallall, as we talk about his work, Beyond Knowledge, and final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with William Hallall, as we're talking about his latest work, Beyond Knowledge, How Technology is Driving an Age of Consciousness. William, do you remember the television show The Jetsons? Oh, he fell off, Tom. Try to get him back. See if he's there. Nope, he is not there. We'll let Tom do it. But I'm going to go to the phones, and we're going to get some of your response. We'll do it in an open line format, having some incredible phone issues tonight with his phone. Let's talking about high technology. Let's go to Walt in Pennsylvania. Walter, welcome to the program. You are up.
George, are you ready to duck and cover?
Absolutely.
George, not since 1962 have I felt like this. I mean, we're at a crossroads, George.
I know the feeling. I was 12 years old during that Cuban Missile Crisis, and I thought that was the end of the world then.
Yeah, I'm just 8 months younger than you, George. I remember it very, very vividly. It was a scary time, and I think what's happening now is at least as tentative as that. That's 1962. I just want to say, Mr. Hillel was, very cogent, very good conversation. I think with Putin, obviously he's. I think, it's a mental issue with him. Now, I think, George, I think he realizes he's a dead man walking, as I told Tom. He's condemned either way. He's got to win this thing, George. It's like even if he doesn't have a terminal disease, he's condemned because he's cornered now, George. And that's why this is a very dangerous time in human history, George. It's like when Hitler was in the bunker. When Hitler knew everything was lost, and they had the Operation Valkyrie, where they tried in 1944, they tried to assassinate him, and Rommel was behind it. And Hitler made Rommel commit suicide.
You imagine though, Walt, if Hitler had nukes, he would have used them everywhere.
Without a doubt, George. And he told Albert Speer to destroy everything at the end. He wanted everything destroyed. He wanted to take everything with him to the grave, George. And luckily, people like Albert Speer refused his order in the end.
And I think there are some Russians who would be like that and would refuse orders by Putin. And I think that's coming up very soon.
Well, George, hopefully there are people like that, that will disobey his irrational irrationality that he's going through now. Another thing, George, I was very taken by what Howard Bloom said last week. That Putin. We think of the Russians as being atheists, but they say Putin is very quite religious. He's an Eastern Rite Christian, and it's frightening to think that Putin may regard himself as a modern-day Rasputin.
Absolutely. And by the way, Walt, we've got William back on, I'm told. So if you have a question for him, go ahead.
Well, I enjoy the conversation. It's very, like I say, I hope we can come to a state of nirvana or whatever you want to call it, or, kumbaya in the end, the consciousness, whatever you want to call it. But we are literally at the crossroads now, and I hope we can transcend it, George.
Thanks, Walter. Do you think we're at the crossroads now, William, or can we pull beyond it?
I think I think he made a really good point. This is a very critical point in civilization. Exactly. It's a crisis of maturity. We were forced to become mature civilization, or we're not going to make it.
David in Mississippi, welcome to the program. Hi, David.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thank
okay.
you for having me on.
Thank you.
If I could just get a quick Mississippi minute here, I'm going to try to be quick and
yes,
straightforward.
Yes, sir. Go for it.
Keeping it simple, if you look at all of society, actually, it's really wherever society's advancing, the earth is dying. So I believe if we go back to the basics, we'll regain the natural skills and abilities that our human consciousness has lacked. Like, we used to remember everyone's phone numbers. Now our phone does it. We can't even remember our own, And if you think about it, technology just makes problems so complex you can't solve them, You want to feed people? Teach them how to grow plants, Grocery stores won't allow that. If it bears fruit, it attracts insects. Now it's a health hazard. So they actually remove fruit-bearing trees from the natural environment, And with the whole conscious thing, everybody has proof of this. We are in a hologram, right? And our consciousness actually makes reality around us. You'll be doing that trick shot all day long. You go to show it off to somebody, and if they believe not, you can't do it. The second they're watching, you miss. And then all of a sudden you get it. You're like, whoa, did you see it? They're like, oh, no, I was looking away.
They weren't seeing. They weren't watching.
Yeah, because their disbelief actually is like if the whole world decided that gravity didn't exist and we could fly down here, instantly we'd all just be able to float around.
Well, interesting take on that. William, let me ask you this, too. What do you think of some of these social media outlets that are banning people because they don't like their views. They don't like what they're saying.
Well, that we shouldn't be doing that because it violates our right to free speech. But I do think there is a need to control the disinformation and misinformation. That's different. That we have to police the media, or else we're going to live in a world of nonsense where nothing, if we don't have truth, nothing works. Markets don't work. Democracy doesn't work. So I think there is a need to police the media carefully.
But who's going to do the policing that you can trust?
I think you would probably use some, ideally it would be a panel of consumers for maybe other platform, like Microsoft, Facebook. Facebook has a board of some kind made up of experts and users, and they supposedly are supposed to monitor the control that they exert. You know, what do they decide to delete from the platform and so forth? And I think that's necessary. You have to have some control over this, or else it's nonsense.
Can it get too big where it's too out of control?
I'm sorry?
Is it sometimes too big where it's just out of control?
The platform's getting too big?
Yeah.
The Facebook is a monster. Like 2 billion customers, for God's sake.
I mean, how do they monitor 2 billion people? They can't.
Yeah. But they've got a lot of competition now. You know, Instagram and all of that.
Oh, yeah. It's all over the place. Let's go to Charles in California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Charles. Go ahead, sir.
Hi there. I'm going to try to frame in a couple of questions if I can.
Sure.
I tend to see evolution as a trauma-induced process, that being the periodicity of the amplitude of the trauma cycles. So it says, see the system capacity respond, it will evolve to a more robust form. And I also see this process accelerating and the size of the trauma cycles getting larger in amplitude. That's one thing. The other thing, though, is that, and I've been to IONS a number of times, I talked to Edgar Mitchell before he passed away, and one of the things I've constantly been looking at, there's a lot of theory about telepathy or things like it being a function of quantum entanglement. In fact, I might even suggest that there's something I would call quantum cognition, a type of sensory process, just like our other senses, although it's very, very subtle or very subdued, except for very few. If we get into genetic engineering in the future, which I think is quite possible, could this be amplified? Could this become a sort of a menu item on a genetic list to amplify our telepathy? And would that change our station in the world? If everybody was aware of each other's thoughts to some degree, that might alleviate much of the tension we feel now.
Well, it could. It could also make it worse. What do you think of that, William, if everybody had the ability to monitor everybody's thought process? William,
well,
you there?
We're reaching an interesting point where it's becoming possible to communicate using what amounts of little telepathy. That is, we can pick up messages from monitoring the brain waves, and use that to communicate silently. You can just think. And there are a lot of experiments being done, and it's effective. A paraplegic person can just think and control a computer. So there's enormous strange things are going to happen when these technologies mature.
What do you think of Elon Musk's Neuralink process?
Yeah, I think that's another really fertile area that Elon Musk is pioneering. I'm very excited by it. Everything he touches is pretty much a great success, I think. And a brain-computer interface is coming, no question about it.
I'm not sure I would put a chip in my head, but, you know, if I had some kind of problem, it might work.
We could do a lot of things with it. It could be dangerous.
All right. Thanks, Charles. Appreciate your call with us. Let's go to Joe in York, Pennsylvania. First-time caller. Hey, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hey, George, I listen to your program all the time.
Thank you, Joe.
we're about the same age. We came through the you know, the same events in our life's history and what have you.
We haven't missed many, have we?
Oh, yeah. I'd like to agree with your guest, the fact that there is great potential for good and great that already has been done with technology. But where's the great potential for good? There's also the great potential for repression and evil. And his basic endorsement of the Chinese system over there, where anybody that doesn't agree with him or follow the guidelines and the things that the government wants you to do, they're going to eliminate you.
You're gone. So, that's right.
You know, so his endorsement of that sort of tells me these globalists all follow that same path and that kind of thing. They follow in that same line. And the fact that he wants to take away people's free speech, even though he said that he didn't, and want to put in a one man's truth is another man's false narrative. So, I agree with the great potential, but you have to look at the other side too. There's always a law of unintended consequences.
Bill, he's probably right, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's true. But you know, China is a great menace, of course, in many ways. But that's the way the Soviet Union was about 1980, before it collapsed. There was a period when we thought that they had a more powerful system than ours. And we believed that their propaganda, that they were going to overtake us. Didn't work out that way. Those autocratic systems are cumbersome, and they don't hold up over time. So I think it's entirely possible that the Chinese system could collapse.
Text and tweets. Tom, what do you have for us?
This one in from Carol in Louisiana. I'm elderly and very old school. I'm enjoying listening, but how does your guest define the new age of consciousness?
The new age of consciousness, William?
Well, consciousness, as I said, is I think of it as emotions, values, beliefs, and higher order of thought. The thing that really we go through every day. We just don't think of it in those terms. But every day you go through these kinds of cognitive functions, like you get angry, or you're happier about something, or you have a vision or an idea. That's consciousness. As opposed to the more rudimentary stuff that computers can do, which is just perception and making decisions. That's easy. That's objective. But the higher order stuff, emotion, values, beliefs, all of that is higher order consciousness. And that's what we're doing now, because the objective functions are being automated by digital technology and AI. And so its attention is moving up the hierarchy of consciousness into the higher the functions, values, beliefs, and emotion. I hope that answers your question.
Let's go to Carl in the Bronx in New York. Hello, Carl.
Hello, George. Thank you for taking my call. And William, I have a few questions. And one, I want to say that Hitler got away to Argentina, and he left his double in the bunker dead. Okay, and I'm wondering whether Putin's going to do the same thing. He's going to go the way of Hitler. That's one question. And another question is that we know that our alien space brothers have already given the Earth free energy processes, which would clean up all the pollution, and the free energy processes we would not have to be using fossil fuels. The only problem we have is that we are on a monetary system. And it does not, because we're on a monetary system, they can't make money off of free energy. Neither can they make money off of cures, which many of the cures have been locked up for cancer and many other diseases. We have no cures because the monetary system prevents them from being released.
You have to watch the money to be sure. We're out of time, William, but I want to thank you for being on the program. Good luck with the book, Beyond Knowledge, all right?
Thank you, George. It's been a great pleasure being with you.
You take care of yourself. And did Hitler escape and go to Argentina? Some people believe he might have done that. And you know what? Anything is entirely possible. Too bad we really didn't have DNA evidence at the time. Might have been able to check that body.